We are live streaming now. And so, hey, Don. And thank everyone for all the love and support and prayers. If you don't know, and of course, I'm sure there's some people on YouTube, but if you don't know, my son, 20-year-old son, passed away on September 9th. And so I've not been doing the Discovering Buddhism class for the past 3 weeks. But I'm glad to be back now, and I do so much appreciate all of the prayers. It's just the prayers, the love, the support. It has really sustained us, our whole family and friends, and it's very meaningful. So thank you everyone. And you know, in regards to that, actually, Wednesday is day 28 of his passing, and there's a medicine Buddha puja to benefit Orion on Wednesday evening at 5. So, and it's all Zoom. It's all through Zoom. It's all online. So if you want to join us for that, you know, just go to the Kadampa Center website. The easiest way to find it is on the calendar, which is my go-to place, as most of you know. And, you know, on Wednesday evening, you can just, you'll see it there, and you can get register and get the link. So anyway, and if not, there'll be another one on day 49. So once someone passes, there's about a 49-day period where they may, their consciousness may be in the bardo. So that's what these numbers are significant. Okay, so without any further ado, Don, I'm going to turn it over to you. And this is one of my favorite modules, back-to-back with Death and Rebirth. Two of my favorites. So I'm looking forward to getting back to it.
Okay.
Thank you, Linda.
I can make this incredibly boring tonight with lots of data. I just can't do that, though. I can too. But we'll get to it in a little bit. So has everybody had a pretty good week? Raise your hand if you've had a good week. I can see hands over here.
As good as can be expected, right? Lots of naps.
What do you expect? I mean, you know, things are going to go wonky in samsara. Just how it is. So let's start out with, you know, a little bit of meditation. I don't know why my nose gets stuffy all around the time of this class. Some kind of karmic obstacle that's coming up for me. But anyway, so let's sit up and sit up straight. And we'll start out with, this is going to be a little bit different. We haven't done, I promise you, purification practice. And so we're going to do Vajrasattva purification after we do a little mindfulness. I tell you what, Linda, let's do like, you know, maybe a 3-minute meditation to calm down, and I'll guide that. And then we'll do the traditional, you know, prayers. But then this sort of Vajrasattva practice created by Lama Zopa has a lot of repetition of the prayers in it. And some of it is cryptic. In fact, a lot of it's cryptic. So I want you to just hang in there and to the best of your ability, and I'll try to make some sense of it over time. But it's important, you know, we talked a lot about how karma is, you know, positive karma always leads to suffering, right? And that karma, these little tiny seeds grow exponentially, you know, the seeds of negativity can grow exponentially. The seeds of positive actions, even tiny positive actions, grow exponentially. So karma is always expanding, and so we need to purify anything we've done today or even up in this moment in our lives. We have an opportunity to purify it tonight in this practice, at least weaken the force of it. And then you can't experience the result without creating the causes. That's sort of, we had quite an active discussion about that last week. And I really, you know, there, everybody was, it was a lively discussion. It was a good talk, good conversation about karma. So that was good. And then, so we'll do that. We'll do that, you know, we'll get into more details after we do the Padrasattva practice. But so that, you know, so there's the power of the reliance, which is the Buddha, Dharma, Sangha, and compassion. That's the first power, to purify the mind, right? The second power is the power, it's the power of regret. It's where we bring the mind, actions of body, speech, and mind, that we really, in our heart of hearts, cringe when we think about it, and we have some kind of, you know, we don't, it makes us like wince when we think, God, I did that? Shame, I wish I hadn't done that kind of thing. Like you poison yourself, right? And then the next is the power of the remedy. So we're going to do, this practice includes all of these powers, and the power of the remedy is a recitation of the Vajrasattva 100-syllable mantra. And you don't have to know the meaning of the mantra, although it definitely has a meaning, but you just have to get a sense that this is powerful practice. We try to visualize light and nectar from Vajrasattva in our body, purifying our body, speech, and mind of all negativities, as we say it 21 times. And I'll lead it. I know some people know it. If you know it, kind of leave your audio on and say it along with me. And then the last one is the power of resolve. And that's considered the most important power. And that's where we make a strong resolution in our heart of hearts to not repeat this action for as long as we can possibly not repeat it. So that's really, really important. And it we try not to lie about these things. So, but as much as we can, be truthful about how long we can restrain ourselves. So we'll start out with doing some breathing meditation. So sit up straight, and you can keep your eyes slightly open or closed, whatever is most comfortable. And find a comfortable posture to sit in, be it in a chair, sitting upright, or on a cushion. You can be sitting cross-legged or not. You know, eventually we all want to be able to meditate lying, sitting, or standing. Like in whatever position we're in, we want to be able to have that meditative mind 24/7. Just take a deep breath and exhale. We're going to count to 10, by the way, 10 breaths starting in. And the second breath, we take another deep breath and hold it at the top as we exhale. Imagine we're letting go of all negativity, all of anxiety, whatever bothers us. And then you continue to mindfully breathe, counting each in and out breath as a single breath up to 10. And then if you get lost, just go back to wherever you remember you were and continue. And if you get to 10, start over again. We'll do this for a couple of minutes. can just, again, let me refresh your memory about the four basic characteristics of karma. The positive actions always lead to happiness, and negative actions always lead to suffering. So that's the first law. And the second one has to do with karma is expandable. It always, can grow exponentially, either positive actions or negative actions. And then we cannot experience a result without creating the cause. So in essence, everything that happens to us, be it positive or negative, is according to this law of karma that the Buddha taught, and that we can't understand fully until we are enlightened ourselves, that we cannot experience a result without creating the cause. Thus, anything that we experience is the fruit of our own former actions. And that the karmic seeds are never lost. They're enduring. Unless two things can happen. One is we can purify them. Actually, three. When we experience the result of a karma, it's finished. We can't speak. It's like a seed. It's burned up. It's used up. So that in that way, karma doesn't last. But generally speaking, karma doesn't last until the cooperative conditions come together for it to ripen. We can destroy karma with a moment of anger can destroy a negative, eons of negative positive karma. So we can destroy karma, positive karma, and we can purify negative karma. So when we say karma is enduring, it lasts. It does until something happens to alter it, as we just spoke about. And so the four remedies, the four R's for purification, are the reliance, regret, the actual remedy, which in this case will be the Vajrasattva mantra, and then the resolve to not do it again. So those things, again, the most important parts of this whole module I just spoke about. There's a lot of details in between, but those are the key points. So I am going to read this, because this is from Lama Zopa, and also Kendall Magnuson, who's a friend of mine, but she was instrumental in helping to create Tibetan, discovering Buddhism modules. She, along with Mary Colony, were the key people in the early days. This is 20-some years ago. So we're going to start out by setting our motivation. For the practice, for doing this purification practice, reflecting on how precious our human life is, the opportunity that we found now, that we've, miraculously met these rare and precious and liberating teachings, and the wish to take advantage of this chance as much as possible before we die in our life. Most of us, I can speak for myself, we're on the back nine, but we don't even know. We could have been on the back nine when we were younger, in the sense of life is so precious, can be over at any moment. Thinking about those in our lives that we know directly or indirectly that we want to help in some way, acknowledging that place within our hearts that truly wishes to develop and to awaken our qualities of wisdom, compassion, and ability to help others. So that's bodhicitta, isn't it? That's that. I must develop my inner qualities. I must purify my negative obstacles, negative karma, and develop my good qualities so I can truly be a benefit to others. So that's the goal for practice in this tradition. And then realizing how wonderful it would be to be free of the belief in self-concept, free of the prison of the contracted self, recognizing that even though we might have a great wish to develop realizations in our mind, our minds just feel very dull, blocked, and unable to see or understand. Feeling the great burden of mountains of negativities, misknowing reality, and acting out of ignorance that we have been that have been imprinted on our mind stream, cluttering up our wisdom, counteracting our compassion, blocking our ability. So wanting to be free of all of these blocks, all of these myths, veils, all these negative patterns, and to be free to act in ways beneficial to ourselves and others. So with this wish, we'll do the practice of Vajrasattva. So I'll say a few words as we do the visualization, but this is the preliminary visualization. So again, with this heartfelt motivation, in the space before us is Vajrasattva, father and mother. You may have seen pictures of these two tantric deities, this male and female deity in union, but you just imagine that they're in the space in front of us at the level of our forehead, so about 6 feet ahead of us, and they're seated on a lotus and moon seat, but this is hard for us to visualize. So, you know what your car looks like. So maybe you can't visualize Vajrasattva, father and mother, but you can imagine like an orb of light that's the embodiment of all the qualities of the Buddha, and that this particular Vajrasattva, father and mother are going to help us purify our mind. We're actually going to use our mind to purify our mind. So they're in union, the union of wisdom and method, that is the principal method being compassion, representing the perfect union of the mind of enlightenment. Perfect purity radiating white light. Visualizing ourselves surrounded by all living beings, our father of this life on our right side and our mother on our left, enemies and those beings who agitate us or we feel some aversion or resistance to in front of us, and friends just behind us. And with a wish that all of us would quickly find perfect happiness and take responsibility to bring in about that, with a deep wish to free our mind of all that which prevents us from actualizing the path quickly, we recite the verse of taking refuge. Those of you who have this little booklet on Vajrasattva practice, and also you can download this. It was in the homework that went out on the internet. You can download this practice. But this is, some of this is cryptic language that is used in Tantra, and I'm not going to take any time to try to explain it right now, but those are the esoteric teachings of Buddhism. Again, this is taking refuge. Remember, we take refuge because, number one, we feel dread or fear of what's going to happen to us with this crazy mind of ours if we let it go on. And the teachings say even eventually dread of the consequences of being reborn in the lower realms, the joyless realms. So that's the dread we feel. The confidence in the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha to liberate us, to help us guide ourselves to liberation. It's up to us to do it. The Buddha can't do it for us. And lastly, compassion, not only for ourselves, but for all beings. So this is called the power of dependence, or the power of reliance. Taking refuge. I forever take refuge in the Buddha, Dharma and Sangha, and in all the three vehicles, in the bikinis of secret mantra yoga, in the heroes and heroines, and their empowering goddesses and the bodhisattvas, but most of all, I take refuge in my holy guru forever. Again, this is a unique refuge that would be said in a tantric practice. I forever take refuge in Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, and all the three vehicles. Three vehicles are I'm not going to go into it, but anyway, in the bikinis of secret mantra yoga, in the heroes and heroines, the empowering goddesses, the bodhisattvas, but most of all, I take refuge in my holy guru forever. I forever take refuge in the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, in all the three vehicles, and in the bikinis of secret mantra yoga, in the heroes and heroines, and the empowering goddesses, and in the bodhisattvas. But most of all, I take refuge in my holy guru forever. Now, meditating on the power of regret, especially calling to mind specific actions of our body, speech, and mind, which only serve to bring about more suffering for ourselves and others, realizing that the definition of negative actions is any action which results in suffering, any action motivated by ignorance, ignorant liking of things, and ignorant disliking of things, not understanding the real cause of our experience. So again, this is the opportunity to recollect actions of your body, of our body, speech, and mind that we've done, not just today, but it could be a week ago, a year ago, years ago, something that really, that we have some, when we think about it, when we bring it to mind, it causes us to kind of wince, and bring about, oh, I wish I hadn't done that. I'm so sad I did that. Like we just poisoned ourselves. I wish I hadn't poisoned myself. Like that. So try to remember something, actions of body, speech, and mind. Or remember the 10 non-virtues. Three of body are killing and stealing and adultery. The four of speech are lying, slander, harsh, and frivolous speech. And the three of mind are greed, hatred, and ignorance. And many, many more. Try to use those to bring about, to recollect specific things that you want to let go of. You want to let go of. This is a very important part of this practice. And as we said in previous classes, you think, well, I never killed anybody, or I never did this or that. But we've done everything in past lifetimes. And what we want to do in this practice is not just purify what we did today, although that's important, really important, but also we want to purify the negative seeds in our mental continuum that we've created in this lifetime and in all of our former lifetimes. And we have all been, we've all done everything. in past lifetimes. We've all done all the 10 non-virtuous actions, not just once, but countless times. So we want to have that kind of open-mindedness that this is, we're going to let go of all of this negativity. We have done it all, and we don't want to be tormented by the boomerang karmic consequences of these negative actions. So we need to let it go. We need to regret it, and then let's let it go. This is Lama Zopa, his commentary. Almost every action I do, 24 hours a day, is motivated by worldly concern, attachment to the comfort of this life. It is like this from birth to death in this life. It has been like that from beginningless rebirths. Nearly every action I have ever created has been non-virtuous, the cause of suffering. Not only that, but continuously I've been breaking my various vows. They're pratimoksha, bodhisattva, and tantric vows. These are different vows that can be taken along the path. Worst of all, I've created the heaviest of negative karma in relation to my virtuous friends, that is our gurus, getting angry at them, generating wrong views, having non-devotional thoughts toward them, harming their holy body, and disobeying their advice. Having these negative imprints on my mental continuum is unbearable. It is as if I had swallowed a lethal poison. I must practice the antidote right away and purify all this negative karma immediately without a second's delay. So this is about regret. This is not about guilt. Guilt is self-flagellation. It implies somebody is, you know, you're guilty. No. This is us recognizing our negative actions and sincerely from our heart, from the depths of our heart, generating sincere regret. In this way, bring to mind specific actions that we know are not in alignment with our spirit of enlightenment and generating great regret, a strong sense of urgency to wash this away from our mind stream, not wanting even the slightest residue of an imprint. And now this is Lama Zopa's commentary again. Many people my age or younger have died. It's a miracle that I'm still alive and have this incredible opportunity to purify my negative karma. Death is certain, but its time is most uncertain. If I were to die right now, I would definitely be born in the lower realms. Because I could not practice Dharma there, I would remain in the lower realms for countless eons. Therefore, how unbearably fortunate I am to be able to purify my negative karma right now without even a second's delay by practicing the Vajrasattva meditation recitation. And then generating bodhicitta. Again, this is Rinpoche's commentary, his continuation. But I'm not practicing Vajrasattva purification for myself alone. The purpose of my life is to release all the different beings in the various realms of samsara from all of their suffering and its causes and lead them to unsurpassed supreme enlightenment. Like joy beyond our wildest dreams, full enlightenment, the ability to really be able to help others. In order to do this, I must first reach enlightenment myself. Therefore, I must purify all negative karma immediately, practicing Vajrasattva meditation recitation. So very strongly generating in the mind stream this wish to just be free of all the negativity, all the karmic blocks, all the negative habit patterns that we've created in our minds in this life and in lives without beginning, not even knowing what kind of darkness are still obscuring, what kinds of darkness are still obscuring our mind. Then this is the Rinpoche's visualization. Above the crown of my head, seated on a lotus and a moon seat, are Vajrasattva father and mother. Their bodies are white. Again, if you can't get this much detail, just imagine an orb of light, which is like a living presence of these this Buddha of purification. Their bodies are white. Each has one face and two arms. He holds a dorji and a bell. She a curved knife and a skull cup. So all of this is symbolic language that has to do with Tantra. They're embracing each other. The father is adorned with 6 mudras and the mother with 5. He sits in the Vajra posture and she in the lotus. So this is a little cryptic language, but it could be explained at some future time. Vajrasattva is Maori Guru, the holy mind of all the Buddhas, the Dharmakaya, that's our pure state of mind, who out of his unbearable compassion, which embraces me and all other sentient beings, appears in this form to purify me and all others. In this way, your mind is transformed into Guru devotion, the root of all blessings and realizations, the path to enlightenment. On a moon disk, this is, if you've gotten this sense of Vajrasattva, father and mother, above the crown of your head, on this moon disk, at Vajrasattva's heart, you imagine that at his heart is this disk shaped like a moon, stands, in the middle of it stands a syllable, HUM, H-U-M, is a Sanskrit syllable that has that sound, but you can visualize the letters H-U-M, circled by the garland of the 100-syllable mantra. A powerful stream of white nectar flows from the HUM and the mantra garland, and I am cleansed of all sickness, spirit harm, negative karma, and obscurations. So as we say the mantra, we imagine that we're being purified as this nectar, this white nectar flows from the HUM and the mantra garland, which is on this moon disk, and it comes in through the crown of our head and completely purifies our body, speech, and mind. Visualize and I'm going to say, we'll do the mantra, but it says, visualize a final purifying stream of white nectar and light pour forth from Vajrasattva's body, speech, and mind. And as we do this, we'll say the mantra together. If you have the mantra in front of you, you can read it. If you've memorized it, it's great. It's, you know, like I said, it took me about a day to memorize this mantra, or one slightly similar to this one. But we'll say it out loud. And the key thing is, if you can't remember the mantra, just imagine that you're being purified. This light and nectar is coming through the crown of your head, purifying all of the things that you regret and completely purifying your body, speech, and mind. It's just, as we say, this very powerful purification mantra. Om Vajrasattva Samaya Manopalaya Vajrasattva Dino Patita Dino Me Mawa Sutokayo Me Wama Supokayo Me Mawa Anarakto Me Mawa Sora Siddhi Me Praya Chaha Sora Kama Suchami Siddham Sriyam Kuru Hum Ha 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 Ho Bhagavan Sora Tate Gadra Vajra Mami Mutra Vajra Bhava Mahasamaya Sapa Ahom Pe Om Vajrasattva Samaya Vajrasattva Dino Patita Dino Me Mawa Sutokayo Me Mawa Supokayo Me Mawa Anaruto Me Mawa Sora Siddhi Me Prayacha Sora Kama Suchami Chiram Sriyam Guru Hum Ha 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 Ho Bhagavan Sawa Tanda Gadra Padra Mami Mucha Vajra Bhava Mahasamaya Safa Ahum Pe Om Vajrasattva Samaya Vajrasattva Dino Pa Dino Me Mawa Sutokayo Me Mawa Supokayo Me Mawa Anarata Me Mawa Sawa Siddhi Me Prayacha Sawa Kama Suchami Siddham Sriyam Guru Hum Ha 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 Ho Bhagavan Sawa Tata Gadra Vajra Mami Mitra Vajra Bhava Mahasamaya Sava Aho Be Om Vajrasattva Samaya Manopalaya Vajrasattva Dino Mawa Sutokayo Me Mawa Supokayo Me Mawa Anarata Me Mawa Sava Siddhi Me Prayacha Sava Kama Suchami Siddham Sriyam Guru Hum Ha 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 Ho Bhagavan Sava Tate Gadra Vajra Mami Mucha Vajra Bhava Mahasamaya Sava Ahum Pe Om Vajrasattva Samaya Manopalaya Vajrasattva Om Varusapa Samaya Manopalaya Patrasapa Tino Patita Tiro Mebawa Sutukayo Mebawa Supokayo Mebawa Anorecto Mebawa Sawati Mepayacha Sawakama Suchami Chidam Sriam Kuruhum Ha 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 Ho Bhagawan Sawatata Gadra Vadra Mami Mucha Vadra Bawa Mahasamaya Sapa Aum Pe. I'm just going to do it 7 times. We could do it 21, but I think it's more powerful if you memorize the mantra. There is a shorter version of the mantra, which just Vajrasattva Aum Pe, which we could do 7. We could do that 14 more times. Om Vajrasattva Aum Pe, 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 Om Vajrasattva Aum Pe. So that's a short version of the longer 100-syllable mantra that we did. Visualize a final purifying stream of white nectar and light pour forth from Vajrasattva's holy body and mind, and like a very, very strong shower completely cleanses from our mind body complex every single negativity, every single mental veil. These wash away completely through the soles of our feet, enter a crack in the earth, and are consumed by the Lord of Death amidst the blazing fire. He becomes completely satiated, that is, the Lord of Death. His mouth is sealed with a double dorje. He turns and walks away. The crack in the earth heals, and our body and mind are completely calm and clean like crystal. From the crown of my head, Guru Vajrasattva says, child of the race, or sometimes it says child of the lineage, your negativities, obscurations, and broken and damaged pledges have been completely purified. Generate strong faith that all is completely purified, just as Vajrasattva has said. This is really important part of this practice. Generate strong faith that we have been completely purified, our body, speech, and mind, of all of these negativities, just as Guru Vajrasattva has said. And then the most important of the 4-pointed powers, we've done 3, right? Refuge, regret, and the remedy, which was the mantra. Now we're doing the power of restraint, or resolve. So, power of restraint, refraining from creating negative actions again. So again, Lama Zopa says, before Guru Vajrasattva, I vow never again to create these negative actions from which I can easily abstain, and not to commit for a day, an hour, or at least a few seconds, those negative actions from which I find it difficult to abstain. And now the absorption. So Guru Vajrasattva, father and mother, they're extremely pleased with your pledge, with your the vow of your power of restraint, that pledge that you're not going to do it again. Vajrasattva, father and mother, melt in the light and dissolve into you through the crown of your head. And your body, speech, and mind become inseparably one with Guru Vajrasattva's holy body, speech, and mind, completely purified, completely pure. So think about that. Your body, speech, and mind become inseparably one with Guru Vajrasattva's holy body, speech, and mind. In emptiness, there is no I, creator of negative karma. There is no action of creating negative karma. There is no negative karma created. Place your mind in that emptiness for a little while. In this way, look at all phenomena as empty. They do not exist from their own side. Of course, things do exist. This is very much like the Heart Sutra. Things do exist, but not from their own side, not the way they appear. They are completely empty. Then with this awareness, there is no negative action with the subject alone. No negative action with the object alone. No negative action. And it's impossible to engage in action without subject and object. With this awareness, we then dedicate the merits. Well, this is the, you know, the teachings on emptiness, which are so profound that the Buddha realized. Due to all these merits of the three times collected by all the Buddhas, Bodhisattvas, myself, and all other sentient beings, which appear to be real from their own side but are empty, may I, who appears to be real but is empty, achieve Guru Bodhisattva's enlightenment, which appears to be real but is empty, and lead all sentient beings, who appear to be real but are totally empty, to that enlightenment which appears to be real but is empty, by myself alone, which appears to be real but is also totally empty, non-existent from my own side. May the precious Bodhicitta, the source of all happiness and success for myself and all of the sentient beings, be generated within my own mind and in the minds of all sentient beings without even a second's delay. And may that which has been generated be increased. May Allah and all mother sentient beings have Lama Tsongkhapa as our direct guru in all of our lifetimes, never separated for even a second from the pure path that is greatly praised by the conqueror Buddhas and actualize the complete path, three principal paths, and the two stages of Hayashoga Tantra, the root of which is guru devotion within our minds as quickly as possible. Just as the brave Manjushri and Sumantra Bhadra realize things as they are, I dedicate all these virtues in the best way that I may follow after them. With this dedication, the three victories, victorious ones gone to bliss, have admired as best, and in this way, I am perfectly, also perfectly dedicate all these roots of virtue so that I may perform good works. So that's the practice that you know, was downloadable from the homework last week, and yeah, Annabelle, would you like to join the class?
No, I'm good.
Okay, can you go get nasal spray off my dresser, please? Thank you. All right. So my 13-year-old daughter came down and she doesn't want to be part of the class, so we'll let her go. Anyway. So anyway, in the homework last week, I did give a link through Lama Yeshe Wisdom Archives.
Don, I did put that in the chat. So it's available right now as well.
Okay, good. Good, good. All right, so that's all good. Can you, y'all, excuse me for just 1 second? I'm going to turn this another way so I can breathe, because I feel like my nose is... You're fine. Annabelle graciously muted me for a second.
I was muted, and I was showing everyone this, and I was talking through it, and I was muted. That was helpful. So I was showing everyone this while you were taking care of yourself, Don.
Thank you.
So it's all right here. Just go to that link, LamaYeshi.com. And if you don't have the link, just in the search, type in Vajrasattva or daily purification practice. Okay.
Yeah. So I actually have the final exam here, but I think I'll do the final exam questions. Just because I think it's good to review all of this stuff many, many times in the course of the class rather than just throw it out one time. So the first question in the final exam is, why is understanding karma so important? Who wants to take that one? Hello? This is participatory time, by the way.
So if anyone wants to unmute, feel free.
Yeah. Why is understanding karma so important?
Carmen, were you reaching for your mute button? Janice.
Because you have to accept your responsibility for your life.
Yeah, that's part of it, isn't it?
Okay.
Yeah.
And because it affects your future rebirth?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And I'll add that, just the recent loss of my 20-year-old son, I mean, just having an understanding of karma, because so many people say, why does this happen to me? Or why did it happen to him? And having an understanding, or at least somewhat of an understanding, I'm sure we don't understand it completely, really helps kind of, I don't know, make it a little bit, I guess, easier, for lack of a better way. I'm not being very eloquent in my wording right now, but that has certainly been beneficial during this recent time in my life.
Yeah. Thank you. That's helpful for everybody, I think.
The realization of and the importance of the, the practicing and during this life, and actually using the time to practice, because we definitely want to be on a good side when it comes for the next life. We want to.
Yeah. Okay, I think everything everybody said is true. I can remember, Venerable Robina going, she would, when she talks about karma, she says, this is the Buddhist view of how the world works. This explains everything. Now, whether you buy, again, the Buddhist view is, whether you believe in karma or not, these are the universal laws. This is how things are created, and this is how these are the laws of nature, but they're much deeper than just you plant a seed and you get a tree. This is actually explains everything that ever happens to anybody at any particular moment. And so it really does explain every aspect of our lives. And it can be useful to, I mean, if these are the rules, it's important to know the rules, isn't it? So we can play by the rules. Positive leads to happiness. I want happiness, so I want to pay attention to practicing positive actions. And these seeds are expandable. They grow exponentially. So let's look for every opportunity to practice virtue, every opportunity to be generous and to be kind and compassionate and to plant those tiny little seeds. Just a little smile at someone, you know, can brighten their day. And that's a positive karmic seed. Some action like that can plant, and just, but also be vigilant, watching our karmas. As Venerable Roger Lamsopa, his attendant said, you know, one time early in my Buddhist education, he said, you know, our real job is to watch our karma, which is another way of saying practice positive, plant positive seeds. Avoid planting negative seeds, okay? And so karma is expandable. We can't experience a result without creating the cause. So everything that happens to us, be it positive or negative, is the fruition of some former action, some form from seed planted on our mental continuum, either earlier in this life or in some former time. Could be last life, could be 10 billion lifetimes ago. But the cooperative causes came together for that seed to sprout. And now we're having this experience. So we cannot have an experience that wasn't created by our mental continuum. You know, basically, everything happens for a reason. And then, and lastly, karma's never lost. And we talked about how, you know, it's so important. Like, because a moment of anger can destroy our, you know, so much positive karma. And we see it, you know, in our relationships, how you can, you know, literally destroy a friendship with some mindless, something that's quite mindless. Doesn't seem like a big deal, but all of a sudden, you know, this friendship of 20 years is now like poof, gone. And a few kind words can transform, you know, some, you know, somebody you don't even know into a friend or an enemy. So just, you know, doesn't take much. So karma can be, negative karma can destroy our positive karma. We can purify our negative karma with purification practices. And again, whenever we experience something negative, this sounds really bizarre, but it's kind of this is fairly typical, you know, Bodhisattva teachings. But whenever we experience some negative thing, that karma is finished. By the same token, when we experience positive things, that karma is finished too. So if you have a lot of money and you're kind of like living large, well, guess what? You're using up all your good karma. You better be creating some more because, you know, the next life is coming. And even this life, there are plenty of people that have gone from riches to rags, you know. It can happen to anybody. And, of course, it doesn't matter how much money you have. If you don't have your health, you know, you're busted. You're just like you're impoverished. So so it's important to know how the world works. And this is the Buddhist view of how the world works. So that's a big one. So what is a complete karmic action? What aspect do you think is most important? So what is a complete karmic action? We talked about that last week. Anybody want to take that on? This is the final exam, by the way, but this is an open book exam. So of course, for an action, you have to have an intention. So remember, we talked about the most important aspect of karma is intention. If your intention is positive, if it's motivated by non-attachment, non-hatred, non-ignorant, that will be a positive intention, and that will result in something positive. So a negative intention, like greed, or some sort of selfish, self-centered intention, is going to bring another result, isn't it? So every action has an intention. To be a complete karmic action, there has to be an object. So, like, for example, we're going to give somebody, let's say the act of generosity. So my intention for being generous is I want this person to like me. Uh-oh, not a good motivation, is it? Not a good intention. Then the object out there, and then the action of giving them a Christmas present. And then the action is complete. They take the present and they say it's mine. Okay, so every complete karmic action has an intention, it has an object, it has an action, and it is actually completed. And those complete karmic actions have the potential to throw us, because they're karmic actions that don't have all these factors sometimes, they could throw us into a whole different kind of rebirth. We say that's called the throwing karma. Okay, what do you think is the most important of these things? Of course, we've already said it's intention. So in the teachings of mind and mental factors, they'd say karma is synonymous with intention. Synonymous with intention. It's that powerful. Our intention is so important. What is the difference between throwing and completing karma? So we just talked. We talked about that last week. Throwing karma. Anybody remember? Hello? Anybody want to go unmute and tell me about throwing and completing karma?
Feel free to unmute if you would like to. Isn't the throwing karma at the time of death, like your state of mind? At the time of death.
Yeah, that's the karma that can propel you into a new lifetime. And it could be a lifetime. Excuse me, I'm looking for another pair of glasses here, but I can't find them. It could be a lifetime. The throwing karma is a karma that can, at the time of death, karmic seed that ripens the most, and it's going to be what's most powerful in our mind. If we've habituated our mind to negativity, then when we're dying, we're going to freak out, and some negative mental seed is going to ripen, and it's going to project us into a joyless realm, rebirth, rebirth as an animal, as a what they call a jealous god. Sorry, not a jealous god, but a hungry ghost, and Buddhism talks about hell realms, and they talk about them not only as mental states, right? Because every day, for example, the hell realm, the major cause of that is some heavy negative karma, such as anger, and the hungry ghost realm is the karma that projects the hungry ghost realm. Is greed, and the karma that projects an animal rebirth is ignorance. So that's greed, hatred, and ignorance, right? The three poison states of mind, and so we need to be. We don't want that. We don't want that kind of rebirth. And so, if we've habituated ourselves to be angry most of our lives, then at the time of death, likely some sort of negative seed of anger is going to ripen and project us into a really difficult rebirth in hell for as long as that, and it could go on for eons, as Buddhism says, it could go on for eons. And then we have an opportunity to get out of hell once that karma has completely played out, just like any seed that we plant. It has a beginning, a middle, and an end. Everything must come to an end. So when that seed finishes, if we have a positive karmic seed, we could be reborn in a more beneficial, more positive rebirth than the one in hell. So drawing karma is so important, and the time of death is crucial in Buddhism. We talk about it. For example, these is an example here. If someone planned a murder, carried it out, and felt great satisfaction in seeing the person dead, they're definitely going to the bad place. Okay? Now we think about the throwing karma is like, it's like if we're drawing a picture and we sketch the outsides of the picture, right? We get the shape and all of that. Now the completing karma is filling in the details of our lives, okay? Completing karma is not as strong as throwing karma. Instead of determining the actual sansaric realm in which we're reborn, it determines the living conditions we find there. We're either rich, healthy, and comfortable, poor, stress, and struggling with health problems, or a mixture of the two. So, for example, if you're born in the animal realm, which is one of the joyless realms because of your throwing karma, but you're like Lama Zopa's dog or pet, that's excellent completing karma. Or we could look at ourselves having excellent throwing karma because we have a precious human rebirth, and depending on our circumstances, good or not so good, that's our completing karma. So, you know, if we have a lot of health issues, a lot of mental disturbance, you know, a lot of friends or not many friends, difficulty at work, all of that is the completing karma. So, any questions about that? Like I said, you don't have to believe a word of this, but this is the Buddhist view of how our whole life is being created by karma. So generally, there are four results of non-virtuous karma. Give one example of each non-virtuous action of body, speech, and mind, and their specific results. So we're talking about non-virtuous karma here now, not virtue. Anybody want to take, for example, what are the, let me say the four ways that a karma can ripen. It can ripen in your rebirth in a certain realm. We talked about that. The result resembles its cause in our experience. Once we've exhausted our karma to be reborn in the lower realm, we will have experiences resembling the action in the upper realm. So, for example, let's say you're born in the hell, you're reborn in the hell realm, and when that karma is finished, you get reborn as a human, but you did a lot of killing in the, before you died and went to this joyless realm of hell. Now you come back to a human life, and so that's a good ripen, that's a good throwing karma. But then you have similar results where you have bad health. You know, people are always trying to kill you. Finally, maybe you do get killed. Okay? And then there's a call to action similar to the cause. Like in the next life, in this life, you have a tendency to want to harm others. You have a tendency to want to kill because that's what you did in the former lifetime. And finally, the result will result in ripening an environment. We find ourselves living in difficult living circumstances. So if we're born a human, we're born with bad health and all kinds of problems, and even like in a war zone, you know, where there's a lot of killing and stuff going on around us, not a good situation. And then we have a tendency to kill. So that's a result similar to the cause and an action similar to the cause. And then we're born in an area that's very difficult, like a war zone, like being born in Afghanistan and sort of like negative karma, big time negative karma, because there's so much killing and so much harming of living beings there. Well, that's an example of killing. So let's take an non-virtuous action of lying. The result, for example, I'm just going to go through these. The result creates the causes to be reborn in the animal realm. So if we lie a lot and deceive others, it creates the causes to be reborn as an animal, or having a miserable existence if we're born in the human realm. We will be constantly be misunderstood. In other words, people won't believe us. If you lie all the time in this life, people won't believe you, will they? It's, you know, and so, miserable existence, constantly being misunderstood, and live in a filthy, unclean place amongst untrustworthy people. So that's kind of a lot to think about. But again, every negative action the full fruit of that karmic action is we'll be reborn. If it's negative, we'll be reborn in a joyless place. We'll experience results similar to the cause. For example, lying. We'll have people lying to us all the time and deceiving us. And then we'll have a tendency, and they will have actions similar to the cause. We'll have a tendency to lie again. You know, some people are just have a hard time being honest. And so, and we know who those people are. We go, why is this person so honest and so upright and trustworthy? This other person's a liar. You know there's a liar. There's a reason for it. It's karma. It's like the action is similar to the cause. And then finally, the environment that we're born into because of lying is a place where it's unclean and there are a lot of untrustworthy people around. So again, Buddhist worldview explains everything. The kind of people we live with, the places we live, the kind of actions that we have, everything can be explained by karma. And then non-virtuous actions of mind, like ill will or malice. The result is very heavy, mainly rebirth in the hell realm. If you have a lot of anger and that sort of negativity, if we're eventually born in the human realm, it will be a violent place and we will harm others and experience despair. So that sounds similar to the other one, but each one of the 10 non-virtuous actions have those four characteristics in terms of their results. So you can see why I don't want to spend too much time going through this, because it could get a little bit tedious. What is the most important aspect in the nature of a virtuous action?
Intention.
True. What else?
In benefiting others.
Creation of happiness.
I'm sorry, say it again. Say that again, please. Right, so
I said it creates happiness.
Yeah, that's true.
And someone else said benefiting others.
Yeah. So the most important aspect in the nature of a virtuous action, and we're talking about the nature of a virtuous action. So, you know, I mean, this is the quiz plus the answer sheet reading from it, but. We talked about this last week. It's not enough to, you know, the 10 non-virtuous say avoid killing, avoid stealing, avoid adultery, okay? And so the point of it is that when you're not, like right now, we're not killing, are we? And we're just having a conversation. So is this virtuous or is this neutral? Now, if we had taken a vow, this is the power of vows. If we had actually taken a vow not to kill, then we create positive karma 24/7, whether we're confronted with a situation where we could take a life or not. But the practice for most of us to practice non-killing, we have to be in a situation where we could take a life, and we consciously choose not to do that. So there's an insect, for example, it's an insect. Could be a human, could be anybody. But let's say it's an insect. There's a mosquito on you, and you get ready to hit it. You go, wait a minute, I have a vow not to kill. So you just kind of flick it off. You know, rather than kill it, you restrain from killing it. So that's the most important aspect which defines a positive action here is restraining from the negative action. So again, avoiding the 10 non-virtues, avoiding the second one is stealing. So you're in a situation where it would be so easy to take money or merchandise, but we restrain ourselves. We have the impulse to steal and we restrain ourselves. That's virtue. We have the impulse to commit adultery, but the situation arises, that gorgeous person that we would love to be with is there in front of us, but we go, no, I'm not going there. That's restraint. That is virtue. That's the practice of virtue. And the same thing with lying. We have an opportunity to deceive others, but we restrain ourselves and we don't do it. That's virtue. And slander, we got an opportunity to badmouth our neighbor or our best friend or anybody, coworker, but we restrain ourselves. That's virtue. And harsh speech, and we restrain ourselves. And frivolous speech, and we restrain ourselves. So restraint is the key thing here. We are confronted with a situation where we could act negatively with our body or our speech or our mind, but we restrain ourselves. So same thing with greed and hatred and ignorance. We restrain ourselves when we see our mind going there. We're mindful of it. We see our mind going there and we apply the antidote or we let it go. You know, we don't follow that negative mind. Okay. All right. Purification, the four remedies. By golly, you better know this one. Who wants to take this on? Sue, you're smiling like you got this. You got this, Sue.
Maybe. Let's see. I'll be with R. First one. Well, I think last week you said refuge. Tonight you were saying something else. Was it resolve?
It's not exactly the same. But
it was kind of the same thing. You had a different R word tonight.
Yeah.
And then regret.
Was right.
The remedy, which is the purification part,
right.
And the resolve not to do this again for any certain length of time.
Yep.
Manage it.
Yeah. So so sometimes we say refuge, but, you know, like I said, we take, you know, and then regret, remedy, and this resolve not to do it again. And of the four, what's the most important one? The power of resolve. The power, promise not to do it again for some period of time. That's the most important one. Now, my golly, I think that is the quiz. The final exam. That was easy. Okay. Any questions or comments here? Because I don't know how we're doing with time. 8:15. Yeah.
I really appreciate the teachings and everything. So thank you. But the idea that it's impossible to be truly virtuous without belief in previous lifetimes, belief in karma, impresses me profoundly. So I really do reflect on that.
What do you think about that?
My confidence builds, over time as you examine it, recognize it.
Yeah, I mean, I think, this particular teacher, I've never heard any other teacher say this, but this particular teacher said that. And it really made me think too that, for karma to really have I mean, some people like to think of karma as, oh, just this lifetime, but there's so many things that we can't, if we're using karma to explain everything, you know, like, you know, so that, you know, so we can truly take responsibility for everything, because there's just so many things we don't understand. And so to really give the karma some teeth, you might say, it does take some faith in past and future lifetimes. Because again, babies are born with all kinds of problems. I mean, is that God who's, you know, some omnipotent, omnipresent, omniscient, all-powerful, compassionate being saying, here, you take this horrible rebirth, you take this horrible life, or, you know, from a karmic perspective, we can understand it. I mean, at least we can understand how that might have causes that that are explainable, although we may not, we can't see it, but that's the Buddhist explanation for everything. Everything is the fruit of past karma. And then at the end of this life, I mean, some people do great things and they'll die. And you think, well, they didn't have a chance to experience the fruit of that. But if their future life comes, there will be opportunities. Those seeds are never lost, as we said, until they ripen, until the cooperative causes come together for those seeds to ripen, then they will. And so, you know, I asked Venerable George Chernoff the other night. I was talking to him the other day, you know, and I think I told you this. I said, George, I want it now. I want the good stuff now. I don't want to wait some future lifetime. I'm not even sure. You know, we all say we believe or have faith in future lifetimes, but, you know, and I actually have a lot of faith in future lifetimes, but I haven't ever seen one. So I can't, you know, I can't say I'm 1,000% sure, but I know I have a lot of reasons to have faith in it. But, you know, it's difficult. It's difficult to understand every aspect of karma.
Don, yeah. This is Linda. It reminds me of that story that's shared in Buddhist teachings about the farmer who had the horse, and the horse ran away, and his neighbors were like, oh, that's terrible. And he's like, we'll see. And then, you know, a few weeks later or whatever, the horse comes back with three other horses. And so then it's like, wow, the neighbors are like, that's such good, you know, that's so great. And he's like, we'll see. And it continues on. And I don't know all of them, but.
I don't know what happened next.
Okay, go.
So his son has to break these other horses that come back, you know, so they can use them. And so he's riding the horses and he gets thrown and he breaks his leg. And all the neighbors say, oh, you're so unfortunate, how unlucky you are that your son broke his leg. That's just terrible. And then about a week later, an army comes through and they're, you know, and all the young men of fighting age are taken away to fight in the war, except the man with the son with the broken leg. And of course, everybody says, oh, you're so lucky because your son had broke his leg and now he doesn't have to go to war and, you know, be killed most likely. And of course, the man said, oh, well, we'll wait. Let's see what happens. So karma's like that, isn't it? It's just random. You know, we are, because we are in this, caught in this, you know, again, the wheel of life, the circle of life, I guess you can call it, like in The Lion King, but we call it the circle of samsara, of uncontrolled causation. And we really don't know what's going to ripen next. However, we do have some power to plant the seeds to cause good things to ripen in the future. And karma can teach us a lot. For example, if you're at work and people don't listen to you when you talk, you have great ideas, but nobody wants to take your word for it. What do you think that the karmic cause of that is?
That either you were lying or not listening to others in previous lives.
Gossiping, you prattle on. You know, in the past, maybe even in this lifetime, you know, you've spoken in ways that are not truthful and wasted people's time with idle gossip, and then nobody wants to listen to you or do what you say. So we could learn from that and say, okay, I'm going to keep my mouth shut and speak, you know, and speak in when it's appropriate and say what needs to be said and shut up and practice that way. So we can learn from negative actions. You know, for example, if our relationships are not working, for example, this is sort of the Buddhist view, but, you know, one of the consequences of a bad relationship is sexual misconduct. So we need to be very careful about how we relate to other people from a sexual standpoint, because the karmic result of that is bad relationships, divorces, and so on and so forth. So it may not in this lifetime, you may not remember it, but we want to be really careful how we behave with other people and so on. So whatever the circumstances are, if we're poor, we're having a difficult life in terms of not having many material resources, that's the karmic consequence of being stingy. And so we need to practice being generous. And it doesn't necessarily mean you have to have money to be generous, does it? There are lots of things that we can do to be generous. We can go next door and help our neighbor who's having a hard time, or go to a nursing home and help wheel people around in wheelchairs, or go to the hospital, or you know, there's so many things that we can do that are practicing generosity and potentially could ripen in this lifetime as a really great result, a little tiny seed. I'll tell a quick example. This friend of mine, we're almost done. This friend of mine who's an architect, he's come to the center. I'm not going to say his name, but he's well-respected, renowned architect in Raleigh and stuff. He's a nominal Buddhist, I'd say. He has a lot of faith in karma particularly. But anyway, he was out playing golf, and he's not a good golfer, but he was playing golf with these other guys. I don't even think he knew who they were. They might have gotten together on the first tee. You know how that happens. And he's playing golf with these guys. And one of the guys just happens to work at SAS Institute. And I guess he's one of the big dogs over there. And so so at the end of the round, this person barely knew, didn't know this guy very well. But he gets a phone call from this guy saying, look, we want your firm. By the way, his architectural firm was not even sure where their paycheck was going to be coming for the next month. And all of a sudden, now this is what I heard. All of a sudden, this guy says, look, we're not even bidding this out. We want you to design and your firm to design Carey Academy. I mean, that was a multi-million dollar project, and the architects get a lot of money. I mean, maybe as much as 10%, don't they? I don't know. But all of a sudden, just being kind and those little seeds ripen for this individual and something amazing. I think we can look at our own life situation. If things are going well, we can change our behavior and, again, as much as possible, dedicate the merits of our positive actions and rejoice in our positive actions. And also, when we do our dedication, recall emptiness, that things are not the way they appear. Really important to have that emptiness component in our dedications. But we can actually potentially create karma that will ripen in a positive way for us in this lifetime if we are mindful and careful and learn from our mistakes. It's very cool. Now, I asked people last time, because there was a lot of discussion about karma and compassion, and there was some concern that the teachings on karma were kind of heartless and would make us less compassionate. And so I asked the question, how would understanding karma actually be a source of greater compassion, potentially? Anybody want to take that one on?
Maybe this is just one idea on that. I think that we can all agree, I think, that we've all done some pretty terrible things in past lives, and it's going to catch up with us if it hasn't already in some other life. And so when we see that happening to someone else, we should be, I think it would make us more compassionate, because, you know, it's our turn could come next. Certainly, and we have no idea, really, we don't know what we've done in our past lives and what it might lead to. So, yeah, be careful.
Yeah. So again, the definition of compassion is the wish that others be free from suffering and its causes. So for us to understanding, again, this is one way to look at it, understanding that, for example, somebody who's behaving in a really negative, unskillful way that's harming themselves, maybe they don't see that, but definitely harming others, we see that that's just the fruition of their own former actions created by ignorance. And they're going to get, they just created another round of suffering for themselves, right? My goodness, wouldn't it be great if they could be free of suffering so we could stop the cycle of harming each other? You harm me, I harm you. You harm me, I harm you. And so on and so forth. It just keeps going around and around. So understanding karma, understanding how people are literally a slave to their conditioning. We're all slaves to our conditioning. We are caught in a process of uncontrolled causation called samsara. And it's, you know, see, the Buddha sees this. This is why they say the Buddha only sees compassion, only has compassion. That's the only experience an enlightened being would have. Why is that so? One explanation would be that the Buddha sees that we are so caught up in appearances and believing that things are real. And then because we have such a deluded view of reality, we're drawn into attachment for those things that are delicious and aversion to the things that we don't like. And we create so much negativity based on our false projections that create more and more suffering for us. And it just breaks the Buddha's heart to see us not only suffering because of our delusions, but creating the causes for more suffering. On and on and on. This is a cycle of samsara. So the Buddha understands that because we don't have a correct view of reality, because we don't see emptiness. We don't see that things that do not exist from their own side. We're not aware that we're projecting reality and believing in it and creating all kinds of suffering for ourselves. We don't believe that yet. We don't, again, this was the last question I said was, what about the marriage of karma and emptiness? Remember that? We talked about in the first class and a little bit in every other class. So it's, everything is empty in the sense of existing from its own side, independent of our mind labeling it. It is completely empty, void of that kind of existence. So it's as if, now I'm not saying there's nothing out there, but it's as if there's nothing there. And our mind is like on a film. You know, there's all of these little frames on a film, on a movie projector. And these karmic seeds are like these frames, and they're ripening like in a fingersnap, like billions of, in every, any mind moment we create, there's 60 mind seconds, but billions of karmic seeds are ripening right now for us to see ourselves as alive, listening to the Dharma, having our experience of being a man or a woman or whatever our life is. All of this is our karma ripening against this backdrop of emptiness. And if we want to see ourselves as having a happy life, a good life, what do we want? We want good karma to ripen. For good karma to ripen, we have to do what? Create the causes for good karma, which is what? Virtue. Therefore, we get back to the very basic 10 non-virtuous actions. We want to be happy. If you want to be happy for the retina, if you want to be happy, we need to avoid creating the causes for future suffering. Practice the 10 non-virtues and practice their opposites. Don't take life, save life. Don't kill, you know, don't kill, but save life. Don't steal, but be generous. Don't commit adultery, but practice, you know, responsible, behave responsibly when in a sexual way, and so on and so on. So it's a really, it's amazing that without an understanding of karma and how emptiness and karma are literally married, it really empowers our understanding of karma. And we have our life is literally, Lama Zopa calls it our karmic projection. And we have some control over what we see in the future. The past is past. We can't change the karmic projection that's occurred up until now. But the future is wide open. You know, the opportunities are endless for those of us that want to be happy and don't want to suffer. Amen. That's it. I mean, that's the end of it. That's really the main point. The main point of this class is to get that. And we'll visit again next week. Okay? So let's do the dedication now, please.
You may have bring it up.
Wait a minute. Any question before I go? Because I don't want to... And you can always call me back or email me if you want to. But any question or anybody want to... you know, we can have a little argument here if you want to, a debate. Can you...
Anything?
No? Okay.
Bring up the dedication.
All right, good. Thank you, Linda.
You want Shanti Davis, right?
Yeah, I do.
There we go.
All right. So, thank you. So, you know, we want to think before we say these prayers, but we've, like, a lot of karmic seeds were planted tonight. You know, good for you for finding yourself making the time to listen to the teachings and reflect on them, and hopefully there's been some benefit in this class, and those seeds will definitely ripen in future happiness. And so we want to rejoice in the effort, the positive effort that we put into being here tonight. And so with that in mind, we want to dedicate the karma, because we don't want this karma from tonight to ripen in a Rolls Royce, but that would be fine. But we want this karma to ripen in enlightenment so that we can truly, truly help others. So we have to dedicate it properly. And this is one of the dedication verses. And we also have to dedicate it with an awareness of emptiness at the very end. So let's do this together. May all beings everywhere, plagued by sufferings of body and mind, obtain an ocean of happiness and joy by virtue of my merits. May no living creature commit evil or ever fall ill. May no one be afraid of a little with a mind weighed down by depression. May the blind see forms and the deaf hear sounds. May those whose bodies are worn with toil be restored on finding repose. May the naked find clothing, the hungry find food, may the thirsty find water and delicious drinks. May the poor find wealth, those weak with sorrow find joy. May the forlorn find hope, constant happiness and prosperity. May there be timely rains and bountiful harvests. May all medicines be effective and wholesome prayers bear fruit. May all who are sick and ill quickly be freed from their ailments. Whatever diseases there are in the world, may these never occur again. May the frightened cease to be afraid, and those bound be freed. May the powerless fund power, and may people think of benefiting each other. For as long as space remains, for as long as sentient beings remain, until then, may I too remain to dispel the miseries of the world. And we especially want to dedicate the virtues of today's class not only to the Sa family, but to Orion's speedy, fortuitous rebirth as quickly as possible. So, thank you. We'll see you next week.
Thanks, everyone. Thanks, Don.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, Don. Thank you, Linda.
Thank you very much, Don. Thank you, Linda.
Thank you. Y'all have a good week.
You too. Bye.
Bye.